The Guardian.
Hello, this is Politics Weekly. I'm Allegra Stratton.
And I'm Tom Clark. And after 100 days in power, we prod the thermometer into the mouth of the newborn coalition and ask, is it thriving?
Joining us from Westminster is our man on the ground, The Guardian's assistant editor, Michael White.
And with us in the studio is the man who muses on economics in Guardian leaders and feeds brains in G2. It's Aditya Chakraborty.
Well, no one won the election back in May. Cameron and Clegg took that as a wake-up call for a new type of politics. Let's just have a quick recap on what happened next.
This is a new era for our politics and something of a new start. A chance for a new generation to show just how good this place can be. It really does look and feel different. Indeed, many of us are sitting next to people that we've never sat next to before.
Prime Minister, do you now regret when once asked what your favourite joke was, you replied, Nick Clegg? And Deputy Prime Minister, what do you think of that?
We're all going to have. I'm afraid I did once. Right.
A number of schools were miscategorised, and for that I apologise. And in particular, there were schools which were listed as proceeding, when in fact their rebuild will not now go ahead. And I wish to take full personal responsibility for that regrettable error.
The events of Bloody Sunday were in no way justified. The government is ultimately responsible for the conduct of the armed forces, and for that, on behalf of the government, indeed on behalf of our country, I am deeply sorry.
I think it's important in life you speak as it is, and the fact is we are a very effective partner of the United States, but we are the junior partner. We were the junior partner in 1940 when we were fighting the Nazis.
The European Union will be better off if we actually include a country like Turkey that will be a very strong trading partner for us, and we need to trade and invest. I think there'll be a good political influence for us because they can help us solve some of the world's problems, like the Middle East peace process, like the fact Iran has got a nuclear weapon.
Today we take decisive action to deal with the debts we inherited and confront the greatest economic risk facing our country. We have been tough, but we have also been fair. The rich is paying the most and the vulnerable protected. That is our approach. Prosperity for all. That is our goal. And I commend this budget to the House.
A big society is about a huge culture change where people in their everyday lives don't always turn to officials, local authorities or central government for answers to the problems they face, but instead feel both free and powerful enough to help themselves and their own communities. It's about liberation, the biggest, most dramatic redistribution of power from elites in Whitehall to the man and the woman on the street.
Mike, we just heard that famous Rose Garden love in there. Some said it would never work, but according to our poll this morning, it sort of seems to have done. What's your appraisal 100 days in?
Well, you can't overemphasize the importance of having a change of government once in a while, and democracy's removal van moves in and everyone feels relieved. We get bored with long-standing governments and they run out of excuses and energy and all the other things. So that's always a good development, healthy renewal. And in this case, we're all a bit surprised. I certainly was by the arrival of the coalition. Yeah, it's been all right. I thought that actually the first 50 days was really critical because then with George Osborne's budget, they set the tone that at all costs they were going to eliminate the deficit by the end of the first parliament. That's considerably faster than Alistair Darling had in mind. And as probably all of us agree, that's a pretty risky strategy and its consequences will feed into all their other policies. So early days going fine so far, but they're not out of harbour.
The same poll says that the public are specifically giving the benefit of the doubt to the new government on the economy. Mike says it's a high-risk strategy, but the public are buying it?
Well, you have to remember that economic policy that we've seen so far from the government has been more talk than action. We've had very little in the way of actual spending cuts, despite an awful lot of talk about them. Just £6 billion cut this year, which is less than 0.5% of GDP. The real test, I think, of this government comes from next April on, when you get the spending cuts that will be announced in October and again in next year's budget. But that's when they start to get made. And that's when you expect, you know, parents, grandparents, workers up and down the country to be sort of really noticing what this government is actually doing to them.
So you're saying, although you know, people said it was a remarkable thing, could it last? You neither of it sounds like think it's really been tested at all yet.
Well, I mean, don't forget, Tom, 100 days is really a sort of journalistic construction more than anything else.
Sure,
I mean,
not.
You'll forgive me if I hold. Well, it's FDR, and you'll forgive me if I hold from comparing Cameron to Roosevelt. I think the significant benchmarks in this government are, one, as Mike said, the budget, the emergency budget, two, the spending review, which comes up in 20th of October. But really, it's next April when you see these things move from being talked about, from being a prospect to being reality. And that's when I think you can actually expect to see the polls turning against them.
So, Mike, is that right? They haven't really been tested yet. It's all talk.
No, good heavens, no. No, it's, you know, you get a fund of goodwill. The opposition has to lay off. The opposition's busy with its own leadership election. But you have to go with the election result. You can't pretend you weren't beaten. You can't pretend you weren't thrown out. But where the coalition and its economic strategy, deep and early cuts, resonates with the public rests on actually a false premise. Voters say, look, I'm cutting back on my spending, I'm cutting back on my credit cards, I'm getting my budget back in order. There's been a huge retrenchment in the private sector, both individual and corporate, and the public sector has taken the strain. So when they hear the Tories, particularly George Osborne and David Cameron, who certainly ought to know better, don't know about Dali Alexander, when they hear them say, well, the government has to do the same, they say, yeah, that sounds about right to me. The trouble is, as Aditya could explain in a magnificent tour de force, which is about to make, is that, of course, if the private sector is cutting back, then the public sector has got a sustained demand, and there's no evidence at all that if the public sector is cut back hard, feeding through on jobs and services and the construction industry and heaven knows what, the private sector is yet ready to say, yeah, we'll move into the space created. But of course, it is always an ideological conservative position. It was when I was a boy, when Mrs. Thatcher was doing this sort of thing, that the public sector crowds out the private sector, and if you would only liberate it from the heavy hand of the state, all would be well. It's nonsense.
Aditya, do you think it's a classically Tory assertion that the state crowds things out? And have you been surprised by the contortions of the Lib Dems to say, well, actually, it's quite a liberal position too?
I think that phrase, crowding out, that two-word phrase sums up very nicely this government's economic policy. It believes the state gets in the way, and it thinks that wherever it is getting in the way, whether that's regulation or public spending, it needs to get out of it. Am I surprised by the Lib Dems? No, because the people who are inside the government, as I think you wrote in your story this morning, are people on the right of the Lib Dem party, and they're the ones who were the orange bookers. Even people like Vince Cable, who holds his current sort of pre-canonised position within public affections, he's not at all a lefty, and he believes in cutting spending as much as anyone else. So the people who might oppose this are not within the government from the Lib Dem point of view.
Mike, we're all talking about economics. There are some other things going on here. If you look at the Guardian editorial this morning, kind of appraising the record of the government so far, there's lots of warm words about reducing the prison population, about civil liberties.
Well, we've got to be constructive too. It's our job as citizens and as journalists, just as it's David Miliband and all the others' job, to be positive about this development. It's you've got to keep an open mind on things. They're going to get some things right, they're going to get other things wrong. We tend to overhype the gloom, and sometimes we overhype the enthusiasm.
So I thought
it was
right,
constructive,
Mike?
Leader.
What have they got right in your book?
Oh, that's a wholly unreasonable question. They haven't had time really to get a lot of things right or wrong. It's much too early to say. I was really surprised when I saw the other day that they're going to abolish the Audit Commission. Eric Pickles, he seems to be having a good time. Then I read more about it and thought, well, maybe. But of course, it's part, as Aditya said, of a whole sort of deconstruction of the regulatory industry, which is very naive, very short-sighted, so I'm cross about that. Am I impressed by their constitutional reforms? Well, if you buy the new politics, I'm afraid of a phrase you used a moment ago, Allegra, 0 out of 10, new politics is much like the old politics.
I think there was a tone of irony there somewhere.
Oh, was it? Okay. That all this stuff, this sort of greatest reform since 1832, you think it's A, it's overblown, B, won't deliver the wholesome results which they claim, and I believe them, to believe it will do, and C, it'd be difficult to achieve anyway. This bill to introduce equal seats and AV and a referendum and heaven knows, and reduce the number of MPs by 10%. Boy, that's ambitious stuff. And don't forget, we've got an economic crisis on.
Tom, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I think there's something to be said for a lot of what they're doing on the constitutional stuff, and there's self-interest never far below the surface. See the equalisation of seats that carves out an exception for Charles Kennedy's seat, etc.
Big part of Scotland, that, in fairness to Charlie.
It is, but there's some other big seats. I mean, and it's not very conservative to cut through wards and boundaries in the way they're proposing. But I'm less focused on the merits of it now, Mark. I just want to know, as a seasoned watcher of politics, do you think any of this is actually going to bear on how the public sees them? Or do you think it all comes back to Aditya's territory about cutting and spending?
I think it's Aditya's territory. I think it's the economy stupid, as they used to say in the Clinton campaign war room. And people may look askance at other issues and other priorities, including the ones we've just discussed, AV and things, if they think the economy is going south at a rate of knots. And don't forget, I listened to Nick Clegg this week talking up AV, alternative voting, where you have two votes and the lower candidate drops out. I have to repeat this because not everybody knows what it means until eventually somebody gets more than 50%. But you know, when Nick Clegg is selling this very piously, as he always does, with self-interest just below the surface, he hasn't got his tone of voice right in public yet as Deputy Prime Minister Nick Clegg. You think, hang on a minute, a few months ago you called this a mealy-mouth compromise and you wouldn't touch it with a barge pole, AV. It's not proportional representation. So you say, well, that's a bit expedient, despite the flowery language.
I wonder if I could make a pretty lowbrow point, actually, which if you take a big step back and you forget about the actual policies, actually the biggest success of this government is it looks coherent after 100 days. You've got a coalition which no one actually wanted. You've got two losing parties, effectively, and yet they managed to sing from the same hymn sheet most of the time. If you look at David Cameron and George Osborne, both of whom didn't look particularly sure of themselves outside power, they've grown in stature since they've taken to Downing Street. And you compare all of that to Gordon Brown, who actually had quite a big majority when he was in power. He looked so uncomfortable that you were just waiting for him to leave. So I think actually the biggest thing, to forget about policies for a second, they're there and they look like they're part of the furniture for the time being.
That brings us very nicely onto a chat I had earlier today with the new Conservative MP for Hereford, Jesse Norman, because I started by asking him whether the reason this whole thing was going so smoothly in publicity terms was because we were seeing a marriage of Conservative and Liberal Democrat true minds.
I think there is some affinity, but I think that's often overstated. I mean, the Liberal Democrats are on that side, on the Orange Book side of the Liberal Democrats, you know, they are liberals. And there is a completely different conception, for example, of the basic notion of freedom behind the liberal conception and the conservative conception. I mean, the liberal conception is very much the absence of impediment and of restraint. And this is one of the things that's given rise to these, in my view, mistaken economic views that are called neoliberal economics. The idea is that free markets should be unfettered and the individual should be able to express his or her will as they choose. But that's not a conservative view, and it certainly isn't a view I think that David Cameron would have. And so I do think there is there's a desire to see these parties as more united, whereas in fact, intellectually, there's often rather substantial differences between them.
Well, that's the ideas side of it, but let's get down to the low politics. Next, I turned and asked Jesse how he thought actually the two parties would get on at the next election.
I think one of the things that we will find is that we won't have the same kind of rather nasty campaigning on the other side. It got very personal, I'm afraid, on the other side during the election, and I'm hopeful that one of the things that I will be able to do as the MP is to persuade people that conservatives are not the kind of ogres of mythology, and that I in particular am a reasonable person that anyone could in principle vote for.
It sounds like you were saying you think the Lib Dems might put their most serious firepower into Labour-held seats next time.
Well, I don't know. I think it does raise an interesting question. I think it's very hard for the Liberals as a party to be very aggressive with people, you know, with whom they've been working very closely. And that party certainly has fed off a kind of mythology, some of it justified, about the Tories from the 1980s and 90s. And whether it can continue to do that when it's as involved as it is now is a different question. But that actually isn't a bad thing because, I mean, not just not a bad thing for the Conservative Party, but not a bad thing for the country, because I think one of the other things that it has meant is that there's been less gotcha politics now, less of this, you know, he said, we said, personality politics. And that can only be a good thing because the country desperately needs to focus on solutions and not on some of the kind of petty trivia of who said what when.
Mike, if I heard Jesse right there, he is A, proposing that the the Lib Dems might go a bit easier on him in 2015 than they did last time round, and B, maybe hinting that there's something more of a kind of general soft pact that's a possibility between the two parties once they've realised how nice they are by working together in coalition. Could it happen?
He's a bit naive and he seems surprised that the Liberal Democrats cut up rough. Anybody involved in politics knows that one of the most open secrets is you don't get dirtier in a constituency campaign fight than when you're dealing with serious Lib Dem opposition. I've no idea what happened in Hereford, but I've heard the story too often. They talk a very pious game, but don't always live up to it.
Mike, right, Simon Hughes ruled out a pact this week. Hughes, what he says isn't gospel. But...
Well, he's the leader of the opposition in many ways. And he's an interesting figure. He's never cut out for government, Simon, but he's stepping into a very proper vacuum, very properly in my view, and saying, you know, we've got to challenge things. Obviously, Nick Clegg would like to lock him in a coal cellar for the next 5 years, but he's not going to be locked in. Now, I thought that when I realised we really were going to get this coalition, that I went to my history books, and sure enough, national governments of any kind, particularly in peacetime, involving Tory Liberal deal against Labour, pact against Labour, which is what we've got now, usually ended up with a split within the Liberal ranks and the absorption of a significant section of the party into the main coalition and party. National Liberals were still being elected under a truce with the Tories when I was a boy in one or two parts of the country. It happened after 1918 and after the financial crisis of 1931. So that's the most likely thing to happen, a split and a degree of absorption. On the other hand, if it went well, could you have a sort of coupon election? Lloyd George tried in 1918, where one candidate got, as it were, the ticket, got the approval of the coalition, not the other. Well, if they get AV through, they won't have to do that. Because you can say, vote Lib Dem first, vote Tory second, or vice versa. With so much of this conversation, it's untried territory. It's really interesting.
Aditya, if you were to talk to Nick Clegg around this time, and you would say to him, your poll ratings were really bad, Sky News kind of bogus, but they had an 8-point poll for them yesterday. Let's ignore that one. R1, 18 points, still down. So on any measure, they are down. He would say, well, hold on a second. The 2010 election wasn't fought on poll ratings in 2005 or whatever. He would say, give me some time. Give me 3 years. We'll have done the cuts, dealt with this crowding out thing, whatever their philosophy takes them to argue. And they'll start to have given positive offers in 4 to 5 years' time. And people in our profession sort of look at the mechanism that would, OK, you have these terrible ratings, but what gets rid of them? So I suppose my question to both you and Mike is, they may be doing very badly right now, they may be seen to be propping up the Tories, but actually what is the mechanism by which it falls apart 4 or 5 years?
To which I think I'd make 2 points, really. One's a pretty basic political one, which is we've not yet had the full force of the spending cuts. I can imagine a world in which you get the Orange Book Liberals in coalition with the Conservatives and things are fairly placid. But that world isn't one in which you're in the middle of a global recession and you've got huge spending cuts that you're imposing, the likes of which we've not seen since the Second World War. And just the very nature of spending cuts and ministers fighting for their individual departments, you've got some taste of this over the past couple of weeks, just between two Conservatives, Liam Fox and George Osborne over Trident. But just imagine how nasty that's going to get between now and October and then when they're forced into reality. So that's one thing. Just the very nature of making spending cuts is going to be too difficult to hold a coalition together, I think.
And this does it fall apart?
Well, you just get ministries fighting with each other, and then you get Lib Dems going back to their constituencies and going to their voters, and voters and constituency members saying, this is not what we're in power for, this is not what we voted for you for. You know, don't do it, Nick. Nick, I agreed with you, you know, in the TV debates, Nick. What are you doing now? That sort of thing. But secondly, and this is quite important, it's kind of a narrative point, which is the whole story for the spending cuts, as propounded by George Osborne, is this. We were in an unprecedented crisis, which is partly caused by Labour, with their spending like sailors, apparently. Then we came into the spring and we had the Greek sovereign debt crisis, and that left us with no other choice. We either had to make these horrendous spending cuts, which, yes, are going to be very painful, but we've got no other choice if we want markets to keep lending to us.
So that's the pretext for the Lib Dems changing their mind.
It's pretty clear that Lib Dems are not comfortable with that narrative. And I think that goes from top to rank and file. So rank and file, I think, probably always had some distrust of George Osborne and David Cameron, and so why would they believe any story they put out anyway? But secondly, you listen to the way that Nick Clegg's wobbled around on this, or Vince Cable has wobbled around on this. So Vince Cable says, oh, I came into government, or I talked to the senior civil servants and the Bank of England, and what they said in the course of those 2 days, it changed my mind. And then we hear from Nick Clegg in that 5 days it changed not very much from Nick Robinson documentary. We hear that he actually was already changing his mind before that. And then this week we have him say it would be morally wrong not to cut the deficit as fast as they're going. So they've not yet. What this tells you is there's a huge amount of confusion within the kind of the Liberal Democrat mind, if one can be highfalutin. There's a huge amount of confusion about why it is they're making these spending cuts. And I think that will come to bear when they're forced to make them. I think that the low politics of having to make them and then the lack of any kind of theoretical background for making them will drive them apart.
Mike, simply the force of the spending cuts will send those Lib Dem ministers back to their constituencies to unprepare for government.
Some will bite the bullet and go ahead with it and stick with the coalition, and others will get flaky and possibly resign. By way of illustration, Vince is the kind of guy who would grapple with his conscience and resign after a couple of years. Frankly, I hope he doesn't. I think he's a good man with things to say and a really interesting CV. Chris Huhne would, and Nick Clegg probably would, Danielle Alexander too, hang to the wreckage of the coalition at all costs as if they were adrift in the Atlantic. They are men of power rather than of conscience in the way that poor old agonising Vince is. So that might happen. My hunch is that unless we get our raft, to stay with the nautical analogy, unless our raft is overtook by a major economic and financial disaster which infects the whole world in circumstances none of us can easily predict, it could happen. It happened in the 30s. They went down again when they thought they were out. If that doesn't happen, in which case you might end up with a national coalition of all the parties, government of national unity, then I think the coalition will survive, though it will lose a few people. Aditya mentioned Liam Fox. He's an interesting man to watch because he thinks he's indispensable, just as some of those Lib Dems do, because he represents the right-wing headbangers in the Conservative Party. He's not a very smart politician, in my view. Watch him as well.
Just to pick up on one person who Mike, I think, rightly picked on in what he just said, Vince Cable. Vince Cable is obviously hugely important to the coalition because he represents something within the Lib Dem Party. He's well trusted in the rest of the country. And if you look at what's happened to him over the last 100 days, it tells you something. It gives you quite a bad sense of what might happen in the next couple of years. Vince Cable stands out for making two big policy announcements. One was a big move towards graduate tax, which was swiftly rubbished by Number 10. And the other thing was forcing the banks to lend more. And that's been swiftly rubbished by the Treasury. So if you look at the amount of sort of back briefing that's affected Vince Cable on the sort of two signature policies that he's held out since taking over the Department of Business, it gives you some kind of foretaste of what might happen over the next year or so.
If an economic crisis doesn't overwhelm this coalition, isn't it still possible a political crisis could? You've just mentioned at the top of the programme, Mike, that Nick Clegg's going around talking about AV, the alternative vote that lets second preferences count, as if it were the greatest reform since 1832. We might all be a bit sniffy about that, but he's going to look bloody silly if he doesn't get it through. And he had a 21% lead in the opinion polls on this in the days after the coalition was formed. According to today's ICM poll, that's down to zero now. If we're on a trajectory like this, it's lost. What happens next?
As high as that, eh? Well, there's plenty of reasons why he might lose, partly because voters use referendums on any subject to punish governments who are doing things they don't like. And by the spring, the coalition will be doing lots of things to public spending, taxing, etc. they won't like. Secondly, as I said, it'll all look a bit airy-fairy when the brown stuff hits the fan on the economy. Thirdly, Aditya's just made a really interesting point, which illustrates my view of the world about the old politics and the new politics. He's just said that Vince Cable said one thing in public, but brief to the contrary in private. Well, I'm not shocked, but some people listening might be. Even the saintly Vince, eh? Whew.
But do you not think there's a real danger, this AV thing? I mean, they're staking a lot on it. It might well be lost. It's hard to read because it's a rare referendum where most people in the government who are putting it forward will be saying vote against it.
And the Tory press will be against it and the big money will be against it and everybody likes voting no and take the smirk off their smug faces.
So let's imagine
of course,
it
when
goes
they
down.
Lose, they'll immediately say, well, we never liked it anyway. It isn't really AV or it isn't really proportional representation. But it'll damage the cohesion of the Lib Dem Party because they've been persuaded that this is a first step towards real PR, which is going to solve our problems in the way that the government of Israel's problems are solved by PR. That's irony, Allegra.
Can I just raise it? Again, another sort of lowbrow point, which is actually what Labour say with their new leaders can be quite important over the next 6 months. the difficulty for them is that I think Labour get a new lead at the start of October, just a few days before we get the comprehensive spending review. And very, very quickly, 25th. You've got to have from Labour a sense of what it was that went wrong, if anything, in their handling of the economy and what they say about the need for cutting. Do they agree with the need for cuts? Do they agree for the need for some cuts? Where do they cut? Do they say, we wouldn't have done any of this? And they've got to get that together so quickly, and they've got to get a kind of a story for where they would like to take the economy that is different from the Conservatives and Liberal Democrats in such a short space of time. But if they can do that, then they could be a major destabilising force in the coalition, I think.
So it's still the economy, stupid. Leave your thoughts on our ramblings at the blog, guardian.co.uk/politicsweekly.
And while you're there, do make sure that you subscribe for free so every podcast gets automatically delivered to your MP3 device.
But that's it for this week. Thanks to Michael White and Aditya Chakraborty.
And to Jesse Norman. The podcast was produced by Ian Chambers. I'm Allegra Stratton. He is Tom Clark. And we bid you goodbye.
Bye-bye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.